Ladies and gentlemen, friends and enemies, thank you for tuning in and spending some of your time with us today. It's always a pleasure to have you here. This is Red Eyes Radio. If you're new to the show, I'm Henrik Palmgren from Sweden, and we have headquarters in the land of the Goths, in Scandinavia, and on the North American continent. We do three of these shows a week. One of them is Radio 314 with Lana. We also cover news, make videos, do live broadcasts, and more. The website, the new website, just updated, is redeyes.tv. I want to also once again extend a big thank you to everyone who donated to us during our live broadcast to help us get up and running with a more stable setup, and it looks like we'll be able to make this mobile so that we'll be able to go and cover certain things on site, on location. We'll keep you posted on the developments on this. So again, thank you to everyone who helped us out, who's donated so that we can start up the new TV show. We are speaking with one of our camera guys today, John Minoxide, that jumped in last minute to help us cover the UC Berkeley event in California last Friday here. It's a fun, laid-back show today. We are going to talk a bit about him, his background, his path, if you will, and also, of course, some of the issues that he is passionate about. So stay tuned. Hope you enjoy. Welcome, Johnny. Thank you so much for coming on. It's good to speak with you again. How's it going?
Good. How's it going, Henrik?
Well, it's busy, as always, of course, but, you know, shouldn't complain. It's there's a lot of fun, a lot of things moving, so it's good times for sure. So
interesting times.
Absolutely. So for those who don't know, obviously, we got you involved. We dragged you into being part of being our cameraman here last week. Really, it was an interesting event, and you signed up to do that. So I definitely recommend people to check that out, because it was a fun event. We haven't really done it before, and you kind of submitted your interests on the fly, but I think it worked out pretty good anyway. Actually, it was a fun event. It was something definitely something different. You know, I haven't seen anything like that before.
Yeah, definitely. I've never been involved with something like that before. It was a great time. I mean, regardless of what I was doing, you know, if even if I was just watching, that would have been great. But I'm glad to have been involved. That was awesome.
Well, thank you. We can speak a bit more about that later, the event and whatever, and some of the things that was going on maybe at the place that we didn't manage to see or whatever in the video. But you told me before we spoke during the live show that you used to be the conspiracy guy. So I wanted to speak with you a bit about some background before we talk about how you kind of ended up doing these kinds of things and doing your own project, your own podcast and stuff like that. So just tell us a bit about yourself, your background.
Yeah, I am I work in construction in San Francisco. I don't care. You know what I mean? That's what I do. I used to be probably the world's biggest conspiracy theorist. I started listening to Red Ice probably 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And, you know, you guys have the Giza pyramid thing, and you'd have Dr. Lloyd Pye and the Star Child theory, and you'd have, you know, all kinds of really interesting stuff. And I believe I told you before, I have a huge bookshelf of books from people you've had on your shows.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've read every single one of them. And some of them scare the absolute shit out of me. because that stuff exists, and why, I don't know, but it does, you know. But I found that as the world started to change, you know, you guys started to go more towards into the immigration, into Europe thing, and then you did a lot of World War II revisionism, which got me interested in a lot of that. And it kind of sent me down my spiral into, to being red-pilled, they call it now.
Right. So you weren't really exposed to much of that material before we started talking about it?
Well, I grew up on the East Coast, and I lived in a neighborhood where there were a lot of Jews. So I've always had a thing. Yeah, I've always been red-pilled on the Jews. When I was growing up, we had the neighbors that would always try to get some of the goys to come over and do stuff for them on the weekend, on Saturdays. You know, can you do this for me? I'll give you a couple dollars tomorrow. And I'd come home and say, Dad, Mrs. Lowenstein said that, you know, if I did this, she'd give me $2. My dad said, never work for a fucking Jew because you're not going to get your money. And I never got my money. And from kind of, you know, like I was grew up, you know, we're Italian, and Italians tend to have a little, especially on the East Coast, they tend to have a little bit of, I don't know if it's a natural racism.
A healthy dose of racism.
A healthy dose of racism, yeah. Yeah. And so I've kind of always never trusted a Jew my whole life. And then, and the Holocaust story never really completely made sense to me. And the more I got into it as an adult, and like even the conspiracy stuff when I was like getting into like 9/11 and who was doing this and the Mossad and, you know, and all the different ties there, I realized what, how bad Israel really was. And, you know, and that, you know, and then you guys had, I can't remember the names of Brandon Martinez and the other, the scientists that did the stuff on the gas chambers. And all that, and mm-hmm. It was just like right. World War II revisionism just like blew my mind completely.
Yeah, so isn't that funny though? Within the conspiracy movements, and that the general kind of gist of it is that everything is a lie. Whatever everyone has told to you, it's kind of it's the opposite and whatever. But on World War II and the Holocaust story, that really never kind of went in that direction, right? It's kind of interesting. I mean, it did eventually, right? But in the beginning, you know, there wasn't really that many people that were, I guess, I don't know if they were not bold enough or they just didn't believe it, but it was like, it was too shocking. The layers of programming that we've had for years didn't manage to, you know, the conspiracy didn't quite manage to reach to that point, if you see what I'm saying.
Oh, definitely, yeah. And the other thing is well, why would you? Because those poor Jews, it's the thing that's happened, you know, ever since the beginning of history. The poor Jews, they were stuck in Egypt. The poor Jews did this. The poor Jews were this. And the poor, you know, and it's always been that ever since the beginning of time. And, you know, and that's, I think they've had that kind of, I don't know if you call it a cover or whatever, but, like, you know, the poor Jews, you can't talk bad about them because they've always been persecuted all the way throughout history.
You know, that is true. Yep.
Yeah.
Now, okay. So obviously, you've ended up you do a podcast right now, whatever. So tell us how that kind of came about and how you know when things started to change for you.
Again, another because of Red Ice, you guys had the guys from The Daily Show on, and Mike Enoch and Seventh Son, and I heard them, and I started listening to their podcast, and I just identified with a lot of their, they weren't completely white nationalists when I started listening to them. They are, you know, mm-hmm. They're more white nationalists now. And I went back and started listening from episode one, and, you know, and I got into stuff on Molyneux and the other guys and, you know, Molebug, and like the more I listened, the more I did the research, and then the more I identified with them, and then all the Jew jokes. I mean, I'm gonna say that word a lot. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
yeah, I mean,
no censorship.
You know, all the Jew jokes and the drops and I'm Jewish and all that. And it's like, you know, because it was hilarious, and they brought comedy to this, and I, you know, always consider myself funny. And so they were looking for people to write content for a show called Saturday Night L'Chaim. And at the time, I didn't have a computer. But by the time I did get my computer set up, the show had been canceled, and so I had been talking with them, and we started a new project, and that's my project, The Current Year Tonight, which was recently called the short-lived Current Year Tonight, but that is a blatant lie put out by the media. We're just on a short hiatus. We'll be back shortly, either this week or next week, with a new episode.
Yeah, well, it was last one was episode 4 in mid-March, I think, something.
Yeah, like mid to late March, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So more is in the works.
More is in the works. We have it's a completely scripted show. It's basically a parody of The Daily Show or what was that horrible Colbert show, The Colbert Report, mm-hmm. or whatever.
Right.
It's a little bit of both. It's comedy news where we just take topics that, like, you know, John Oliver would look at and go, well, it's the current year, and, you know, like, why aren't you whatever, you know, disgusting thing they want you to be okay with now. And we make it funny, and we turn it around to where, you know, because the left has had such a hold on comedy, that we need to take it back and get it away from them because they're not funny anymore.
Absolutely not. I've said it for some time, actually. It's and I wonder why it's taken us for so long to get to a position where we really start making fun of them. I mean, it's almost gotten so far that, you know, the mainstream Hollywood left is almost starting to make fun of itself now because they're such an easy target, you know?
Oh, it definitely is. Even, like, with the movies, like that horrible Seth Rogen Christmas film that didn't really do any good thing. They're literally, like, mocking the left wing Jews because, you know, the guy wears a Star of David sweater to a Christmas mass while on drugs and throws up in the middle of church, you know, and like just horrible. It's not funny. It's not the Amy Schumer that real life Miss Piggy. You know, she gets up and she's like, "I fuck three black guys," and you know, and people laugh because that's supposed to be funny. You know, it's disturbing and disgusting.
Yeah.
You know, and everybody's like, "Oh, she's funny. She's white. Look at her making fun of, you know, she's white." No, she's a Jew.
That's correct. That's correct. You know, so tell me when we started, you know, kind of talking about some of these things, and was there ever a level where you're like, "Oh shit, what are these guys doing?" Or you felt resistance, you didn't want to look at that? Or, I mean, okay, you had, as you said, you had some background already from your dad and whatnot, but overall, we heard from a lot of people that were, you know, very upset over the fact that we dared to talk about something that no one ever talks about. So,
what was
your reaction like?
When I first, my first point of like internal resistance to this was, I'm going to out myself as, I used to be pro Black Lives Matter.
Right. Yeah.
And I actually went to, it's just so embarrassing. I actually went to like Black Lives Matter protests and stuff. And like I was all the Facebook pages, like, you know, police the police and cop block and, you know, the brutal racist white police killed another poor little black kid. And I was all into that because that was, I mean, that's what they, I mean, if you look at it from their point of view, you can see it. Like if you're blind to the racial aspects of all of it, you know, you're going to sympathize with them because it's all over the news. They blast it all, you know, and the white guilt that goes along with it. And so I was listening, I'd be listening to this Shoah, and they started talking about like the Ferguson chimp outs, which they, you know, like where there was like the riots and whatever. And I was like, well, you know, they were just mad because, you know, the cops shot this kid in the back. And I started doing the research and I'm like, holy shit, this is a lie. You know, and then I started, and then you had Colin Flaherty on there and I got Colin Flaherty's books and I'm like, holy shit, this is a lie. And it completely changed. And then the anger that came with that I had been lied to for so long, you know.
But so you still kind of had a view though during that time, right before that, I'm discovering the truth here because, you know, you were into conspiracies, you were examining all of this, right? So it was just another huge layer that had been opened up.
It was a huge layer that had opened up. And like, I felt so embarrassed that I had gotten had. I had been had by that part of it. You know, because like, I'm totally, you know, the 9/11 conspiracy, whatever, you know, the Sandy Hook conspiracy and all this and whatever. But then I'm like, oh, no. Cops definitely kill poor little black kids. You know, and right. then I was like, oh, wait a minute. Wow. They got me there. And yeah. And that tore that open. And I'm like, well, what else is there? And I got into all these other, you know, the other layers of it. And then the immigration and how bad the illegal immigration is here. And, you know, the visa problem that we have going on in this country, you know, and yeah. And now I'm, as they call it, as fashy as you can get.
Very good. Good guy. So it changed pretty quick, in other words, then. And okay, maybe a level of resistance, but really, I find it interesting. I always like to ask because we've had quite a few people, too, that initially wrote and were very upset over the fact that we dare to discuss these issues that came back and we've gotten letters of apology over the fact that they had, you know, told us to go F ourselves, you know, previously. Right. And they said, you know, I never even thought about these things. You know, it was kind of an evidence over the fact that, I mean, the action itself is kind of like proof over the fact that we as Europeans and whites are so disassociated from our own culture and heritage, and we are never in a position where we can advocate for our own interests, basically.
Advocate for our own interests, we're racist. You know, you're an evil fascist Nazi who wants to gas 6 million Jews, you know, or you're a colonialist who wants to rape Africa or whatever, you know, or you want to enslave the entire race, you know, the entire black race because, you know, you understand that 13% of the population of the United States commits 56% of all the violent crimes. You know, you can't advocate for yourself. You can't even know the facts without being called names.
No, it's true. And I think just the other side is so vehemently anti-white these days. I've mentioned a couple of times, but, you know, I've been watching CNN quite a bit for study and just to try to see what's going on. And I've been following the primaries of Trump too there. But it's just an incredible galore of like racial hatred towards white, and it's just an avalanche of black identity politics on like these mainstream channels now. It's just remarkable how far it's gotten, and what a immense double standard it is over the fact that all these other interests are well represented, but ours cannot be, right? We can't even discuss this issue for being, or we're blamed, just as you say, for being, you know, Nazis and racist for just daring to discuss it.
Right. Yeah, you can't. But it's okay for a group of rappers to get together and make a video about how they have a shotgun in the trunk for Trump. You know, they make, and that's a popular thing now at all these rallies. There'll be Black Lives Matter people blasting this song about how they want to shoot Donald Trump. or there's tweets about, well, if this guy gets elected, then we got to kill him. I mean, you know, I recall when Obama was running that there was some guy said that he was going to shoot Obama, and they actually arrested him. They made a really big deal out of it. And these people, I mean, you have, you know, rappers on Twitter talking about, you know, that you have Black Lives Matter talking about kill all whites. It's okay for them to act like that. It's okay for them to talk like that. But one, if there was ever one white person that tweeted, you know, we should kill Al Sharpton, or we should kill, you know, some, you know, high level black person or whatever, mm-hmm. they would be arrested. I mean, like, you know, the FBI would be beating down that guy's door, taking his computer away and like whatever. The one video that I do remember of a black woman, there's that one black chick, I think she was from Atlanta or whatever, she was talking about kill Whitey, and she was like waving a gun around on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the only reason that they got her is because she was actually some sort of activist and had like done like public, you know, gatherings and whatever. And she was, you know, actually waving a gun around. I mean, I think you physically have to go that far before they'll do something about it, you know.
If they mention whites, yeah.
Right.
Otherwise,
we can't say anything, but they have to go as far as pulling an actual gun and pointing it at the camera.
Right, exactly. Well, I don't think it's not an issue of, you know, spotting the double standard for these people. Is just, you get to an unreachable point that if you talk about having your interests represented as a white person, that equates to white supremacy, right? So
it does.
And anything goes in the quest, in the goals of destroying white supremacy. So I don't think it even dawns on most of these people that are pushing you know, black supremacy on CNN, on mainstream channels now, that like, oh, okay, you know, I'm doing the same, so if we would swap the roles, you know, I can see that, right? It doesn't even reach that level. It's just like, well, you know, that's white supremacy, therefore we can shut that down, and you're not allowed to talk about it. Doesn't mean, you know, it doesn't matter, right, if we talk about the same thing, right?
No, totally. I've seen pictures of, like, groups of tweets put together where it's a bunch of different black guys talking about, you can rape a white woman and she'll apologize for not having shaved. You can, I mean, I'm going to go rape me a white girl. Ooh, my boss ass so thick, I want to rape that. Like, and it's like a collage of 50 tweets of black people talking about raping white girls.
I saw that one. Yep.
Totally fine.
Yep.
Totally fine. You know, that's completely okay. It's okay to advocate violence against white people because at one point, white people owned slaves. Yeah.
That's how simple it is, isn't it?
It's really that simple, and there's nothing you can do about it. And it's like at the Berkeley thing on Friday, there weren't many African Americans. There was one black kid that was made a big deal. He kept saying things like, "So you're mad that I got into Berkeley and you couldn't get into Harvard?" Like, that's the reason why you're here. You're mad because what, you didn't get it? Daddy didn't leave you a big enough endowment.
Right.
Stuff like that, you know, like, cause that's, you know, that's why we're mad. That's why we're mad. Because, you know, because we're, our white privilege isn't as privileged as it, as you think, you know, as we think it should be. Yeah. Go to the Appalachian Mountains and tell me about white privilege.
Right. Well, exactly. It's very difficult to reach, these people and communicate on a fair level and on a fair basis. And it almost feels like it's going so far that communication efforts is almost close to like impossible, right? What do you think we can do to reach through?
It's hard because when you do talk to them, you're met with, like, they don't look at you. They're too busy looking at their phone, and they laugh. Everything's funny, you know, and then they make the one guy will make a joke, and then everybody laughs, you know, and it's, oh, look, everybody laugh at the, you know what I mean? It's kind of like a group bullying sort of a thing. When you're out trying to deal with these people, like, one-on-one, they don't really do one-on-one. They work better in packs.
Yeah.
They don't have the mental fortitude or the knowledge. I think they have a bunch of shitty rhetoric and that's about it. But they don't have anything other than that. And if you get them one on one, they get destroyed really easily, you know, but if they don't have five people sitting behind them going, oh, you're a racist, or laughing along with their, you know, dad, you didn't get you into Harvard joke, then they really don't have anything. But, actually changing their minds, that's, that's difficult. I don't think we're going to change. Well, I don't know. I think this election cycle has been changing a lot of people's minds about a lot of things.
Yeah, I think it has. It's just been very interesting. And I asked you earlier, too, just because of the fact that it seems that people are they're able and capable to see our point of view much easier these days for obvious reasons, right? Because if you can kind of try to reach that point of what they are really experiencing out there in the real world, I think what we're talking about makes just so much more sense to them than all this other bullshit and lies that the mainstream is pushing on them.
You have to get them. Yeah, you have to get them with something that. Well, first of all, you can't have any actual leftists around because they're, you know, like the ones that they're going to come over are more of the undecided. You know, not necessarily like they know that they lock their doors when they roll through Oakland. You know, those guys. Yeah. But, you know, and they're not the ones that are going to, you know, they're not the ones that are going to, you know, try and signal how tolerant they are all the time. And look how, you know, look how tolerant I am of all this. The ones that are like, they're on the fence about the whole thing. They know things are bad. They know this isn't, you know, they know that it isn't as good as it was 10 years ago or whatever. You know, a lot of people know that the West is on its way down. You know, and those are the ones that are like, well, you know, they're all bad all the way around. Nobody's really got it right. That's not necessarily true. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
The left is definitely more wrong.
Yeah, I think they are, you know, and that's why we're here talking about this. But it's, you know, it's interesting. You can talk about their double standards. You can point out to them the policies that they're pushing. And I mean, I guess you're right. For the most part, it is very difficult to reach them because they are so convicted on their side. And I think it's also, I think the biggest hurdle, the biggest layer to kind of get through is that if they would even entertain something which goes against that, it would basically mean that they would become a fascist, right? All of a sudden,
oh, no,
I'm a fascist.
Now I'm a Nazi. Yeah. Now I'm a Nazi. Fuck. You know, I understand that this is a bad thing. Now I'm a Nazi. You know, and that's just the worst thing you can be. You know, because from what they've been indoctrinated with since 70 whatever years ago, is that the Nazis were the most evil things on the face of the planet to ever hit the planet, and you know, Adolf Hitler was the worst thing to ever. You know, like he never did anything good. All he ever did was kill people, gas Jews, and want to make this race of giant blonde people. You know, and that's what they believe.
They do.
And I've talked to people who were actually like racially aware of the, you know, like the problems in the black community or the problems with the, you know, in the Latino community or whatever. But as soon as you mention any of that other, you know, the taboo of like World War II or whatever, oh, Hitler was the worst fucking thing ever and don't ever mention that Nazi in my presence again. Like, you know, it's that whole golden calf that you're not allowed to criticize.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Well, you know, it's definitely interesting times because I think one thing that has been working, if you will, from our point of view is basically to not only going to the facts of the issue of actually detailing real history and trying to sort out what really happened, but as much as I, to a certain extent, hate to admit it, I think it is less efficient to do what I've been trying to do, which is to get to the truth of the matter. I think most people aren't really interested in the truth at the end of the day. I think these are selected people like yourselves, like myself, who mm-hmm. take the time to read and study and research and look into and spending hours and hours of trying to understand. And I think, unfortunately, the majority is not like that. They are, they go for trends, they go for this and that, and they just kind of, you know, go along to get along. But here's where the other aspect of this comes into the picture, which is what's going on right now with all the trolling, with all the humor, with all the aspects of taking this thing to just its most wild extreme possible of adapting, you know, the names that they have been calling us to a certain extent, and doing that with a smile on our face, mm-hmm. And doing that with pride, and even taking it further than they ever could ourselves. And it's been just so tremendously effectful, hasn't it?
It really has. You know, we take their memes and push them back on them. You know, we take all their stuff with a smile, you know, laugh back in their face, something like social justice, like the stuff that's going on college campuses. You have your Trigglypuff, you know, those screaming fat SJWs that, you know, no matter what you do, you're triggering them, and they need a trigger warning before every single PowerPoint, just in case there was something that might make one of them have a panic attack and cry. You know, and the college campuses in the United States are probably the worst, I have to say. I don't know what it's like in Europe in the university systems, but here it's 100% cultural Marxism all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if we can, like, because the younger kids that are coming up and that are seeing how bad some of these millennials are and how bad it is, we're actually getting a lot more younger kids than we are, like, the ones in the middle millennial age. Mm-hmm. Because the younger kids love the memes, and they're funny, and, you know, they like the stuff on the internet, you know. And right now it's escaping me, sorry.
Oh, that's right. No, but I mean, you're right. It really is kind of a, it is a cultural revolution, I think.
Yeah, it really, that's what I was thinking. It's a cultural revolution. Yeah. And if we can take it to, well, all right, with comedy, for example, most comics do college tours. That's where your comics get famous and they make a lot of their money, is going to do college tours. And they, you know, they make the college kids laugh. If we can do that, you know, we could start to push it back to the right, push comedy back to the right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And we have to. I mean, and frankly, it's the only place that it can go. I mean, it's so, the left is so depleted and so just drained of itself. It's just, I mean, it's beyond boring. It's beyond mainstream. It's beyond just being a mouthpiece for the establishment. There's nothing there. There's nothing there anymore, you know?
I sat through a movie with some friends that they were all dying laughing at. I couldn't find anything funny about it at all. It, like, it's literally, like, it's like cultural Marxism, Jewishness, cultural Marxism, anti-white, race mixing, you know, LGBT agenda. Like, it's just... And they're dying laughing because it's hilarious. There's, like, nothing funny about that degenerate shit. You know, it's literally just degeneracy. Like I said, like Amy Schumer, she's like, her comedy is like, I took a shit. You know, and that's funny. And that's where they're at right now. You know, like.
Yeah, it's true. Poop humor, and it's just you know, bodily functions. It's not really. It's not intelligent. There's no creativity behind it.
Even yeah, I mean, as bad as people like Carlin were, at least he was smart,
right?
You know, like the comics, like there was still cultural Marxism 100% going through their messages, and the whole, like, you know, but they were smart. I don't think there's any more smart comedy.
No,
at all.
No,
it's literally dick and fart jokes and AIDS jokes and, like, Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, it is horrible. It's utter degeneracy, and you're right. I mean, it's like these, the Judd Apatows and the Will Ferrells and
Seth MacFarlane.
Yep, exactly. It's all the fucking same garbage these days. Mm-hmm.
Like I used to watch the Family Guy stuff and the American Dad and all that stuff on Sunday nights and whatever. And back then it was funny to me. Now I see it and it's just like. I don't want to like compare it so much to like that movie They Live in the glasses, you know, the Roddy Piper movie where he puts glasses on and he sees all this stuff. Yeah, it's like that now. Once you've taken that red pill, I guess you can see it and it's not funny. It's oh, that's degenerate homosexual humor. That's degenerate, you know, pedophilia humor. Pedophilia is not funny. I don't care. Like it's
you know
what I mean? No. Yeah, and it makes plenty of episodes or bestiality is not funny yet. One of the main characters on that show has sex with human beings on a regular basis. Like, that's not funny.
God. Yeah. It's funny, too, though, you know, Johnny, because it's like red pill, even the term was something that was obviously out of the Matrix movie, and it was kind of the alternative
from a
truth.
From a transgender Jew.
Well, yeah, well, that too. That's true. But I'm thinking about, like, what it used to represent, right? It was something that was associated with the alternative kind of truth-seeking community, right? But it was something that has been not hijacked, but it's just been taken over by the alt-right, pretty much.
And they use it for things it shouldn't be used for. You know, it's like red. That's like the thing. Red pill me. That's like a meme on Facebook. Is red pill me on this subject? And like what, you know, red pill me on that, red pill me on this, red pill me on that. And you know, basically, you're basically asking, I don't know what this is, tell me about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what red pill originally meant. The red pill was like you woke up to the Matrix, you saw the lies, you know, you saw through the code, and now you're wide awake and, you know, and they've kind of diluted it quite a bit.
Yeah.
By using it, I don't want to say so often, but like, yeah, so often.
Yeah, it gets depleted after a while. Yeah, no, it's true, but it's as a kind of a cultural, maybe not phenomena, but it's I think it's very funny. It's interesting that it's been like
A meme.
Yeah, that these memes, these items, these powerful symbols, really, whatever you want to call them, has like they have shifted in their political ideology, and they lean so much more heavy to something that is more on the right. It's traditional. It's you know, conservative to a certain extent. And it's like, that's really where the energy and the wave is. And there's like nothing on the opposite side of that. It's like, it's gone. There's nothing left there, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's sad. it gets sad sometimes because you see these people and they just don't get it. You know, they don't get it. And they want to, and they don't. I think they don't care that they don't get it. You know, because they're happy. It doesn't affect me in my little bubble right this second, so it's no big deal to me. You know, you try to talk like, just for example, like all the stuff you guys talked about the immigration into Europe, the Muslim invasion. You know, I lost many, many, many friends in real life talking about that. You know, because that was racist of me, and how dare I? And that poor kid drowned and washed up on the shore. The kid, the Syrian.
Oh, yeah, that. I know.
Yeah.
Yep.
And how dare I, you know, talk bad about these people and like, well, what if you were trying to escape from war-torn California? And, okay, A, war-torn California, really? That's where you're going to, really? Nobody's invading the United States anytime soon. I'm not worried about, just because if we owe China too much money for them to invade us. You know what I mean? It's literally the only country that would. And Russia, I really don't think that we're going to get into a land war with Russia over here. That's just my opinion. But, yeah, to use that as, you know, if you were trying to escape from California and your child was with you and he died, would you think it was funny if people in, you know, France were making fun of you? I'm thinking, well, actually, people in France won't be making fun of me because they're too busy, you know, avoiding spontaneous Allahu Akbar.
Yeah.
You know, right at the time. So, and no, and I don't, you know, I don't see that happening, and I don't relate to that like that. You know what I mean? So they don't see it as look, there's an invasion of these millions of young males coming into Europe to do what? bad things, it seems to me. And, you know, if that happened here, I would say the same thing. They don't see it because it's not affecting them, you know.
Right.
All they see is the poor. They show that picture of the one family or, like, the dead kid, you know, and I'm an asshole for saying, hey, there's 700,000 males coming into Europe right now, you know, trashing as they go through. They're just destroying like a swarm of locusts, everything in their path, you know, all the way up to wherever it is that they're trying to get their government programs.
Yeah,
and they don't care, you know. But I'm racist for pointing this out.
Right, exactly. Well, it takes that. I think there's two people there that can see through that. Either it takes that kind of nationalist inclined person who is kind of accustomed already to taking their own side and seeing how this both culturally and racially is an attack on Europe. And I think the other mm-hmm. person is the one that has an understanding of issues of media control and is more conspiracy minded. And of course, it can be a combination between these two things at the same time as well. But mm-hmm. I'm saying, you know, where we see an image like that and think, my God, that's all it takes, one image to just justify the opening of the floodgates. I mean, we can see what an immense just psychological operation that is to be able to pull that off, to be able to manage and utilize the media in such a way that people's own survival instinct is automatically shut down just because of the fact that they showed a goddamn photo, you know, on TV.
Yeah. A staged photo, even. You know, they had to roll that kid over and get him in position.
Oh, you know? They did, didn't they?
Yeah, yeah. It was a staged photo. Because I've seen the other pictures of, like, the photographers standing around. Don't touch him yet! Don't touch him yet! Don't touch him. We're going to take this picture. Hang on, hang on, hang on. This is going to make the cover of Time. You know, like...
It's amazing.
And yeah, and that's the thing. And if you look at the story of that kid didn't need to die.
No, it was his, you know? His stupid dad that decided to go to Germany because he wanted free dental care or whatever.
Right. And the thing that happened to me was, like, I mentioned that. And, like, so many, like, real-life friends were like... How dare you?
Do you want to murder babies?
Yeah,
right?
You want to murder. Yeah. Like, why? Because the dad wanted free dental care?
Yeah.
That's not what you think. You think that's what it was? I'm like, I don't think I know. If you would read this article, if you would look at this, I don't want to research that. I just want to yell at you for being racist. You know? I saw a dead baby, and therefore I'm triggered.
Yeah, and therefore Europe should be destroyed.
Yes, yes. And how dare, yeah.
Because it impacts me how I feel, and if I'm not allowed to feel better about myself as a human being, because, I mean, if you think about it, it's ultimately still just a damn selfish drive that's
social signaling.
No, exactly. That's all it is, to show how good you are, right, for caring. And then at the end of the day, they don't do squat about any of this anyway, right?
Yep. The other thing that I get from that is, if the United States would stop bombing the Middle East, we wouldn't have this problem.
Right.
Well, who's in charge of the United States foreign policy?
Oh, the Goyim.
Yeah, the Goyim. Yeah, the Goyim that are in charge of the neocons that happen to be named Wolfowitz and, you know, those people in the Pentagon. It's all the Goyim's fault that we're doing that. No, it's look at who controls the Pentagon, and that's what's going on. We go to the Middle East, we fight Israel's wars, we beat up their enemies, and we've created this problem. We, you know, they took out Saddam, that destabilized Iraq, they took out Gaddafi, that destabilized Libya, and now there's the open gate into Europe.
Yep. Yeah, and America too. I mean, they're shipping them in there too, but it's definitely worse.
Oh, yeah, I know.
It's definitely worse for Europe, though, for sure.
And we're importing them in as many as we can.
Yep. It's amazing.
We're getting invaded on both ends. We're getting, like, the Muslims coming into, like, Wisconsin and up in the north there. And then we've got, actually some of them even get caught at the border in Mexico.
Right.
There were Syrians caught at the border.
Yep.
Yeah. We need a wall.
Yeah, that's true. Of course. No, of course. You have to know who's coming into the country. I mean, think about it. Yeah. I saw another story out of Minnesota somewhere, where they're letting in Somalis. And, I mean, just droves of them. And it's funny because they're doing that same in Sweden and Norway. It's almost like they, since there's so many, Scandinavian, all the Scandinavian heritage in Minnesota, it's almost like there's some, globalist is like scheming to try to breed some kind of, you know, some Somali Scandinavian. Yeah, exactly.
Hybrid.
Let's see. You know, but where was I going with this? Oh, well, they let them into the country, right? And then they are pouring millions of dollars into these programs to prevent them from going into terrorism, right? So it's like they have to let them into America and Europe. There's just no other way about it, right? We have to let them in. Otherwise, we are Nazis or something, so we can't block them. However, it's a huge security risk that they might just turn into psychotic ISIS members and start behead people or blow people up. So we have to just pour money into it. Well, I mean, the insanity of that and not understanding that it's like, it would be heck of a lot easier just to not let them in, right?
And cheaper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. And the thing is, it's like, you know, every time you turn on the news, there's a Somali pirate doing this. There's that movie with Tom Hanks. I'm the captain now, you know, the Somali pirates.
Yep.
Even in the media, Somalians are bad people. No offense, you know, to the three good Somalians that are probably out there. But, like, from everything I've noticed, you guys have a tendency to be bad. You know, why would you import that? You know, Somalia, in Somalia, it's one of the worst countries in the world where they're killing each other left and right. You want to import that here? I don't.
That's what it's going to turn into, you know?
Yeah.
Eritrea, mm-hmm. Same thing. If it's just today when we're recording this, I think it was, I try to understand if there were the same stories or different, but I counted, and I might be wrong on this, but I think I counted 3 knife attacks in Germany just today.
Jesus Christ. I saw 2 yesterday.
Two at least. But there was a third one which had different details than the 2 other ones. But I mean, that's just Europe now.
My neighbors are Eritrean and they're really good people.
Right. Right.
Okay, so you know the 2 good ones. I'm sorry. You know, like, they have to go back.
Like, well, what is the saying, right? Okay, so we have a bowl of 500 M&Ms and only 10 of them are poisoned. Let's take a handful and see what happens, right?
Right, right. I love that. I love that one. They just look at you like, you're an asshole for saying that. Like, no, I said, why? It's a comparison that a 5-year-old can understand.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? It's like when I describe democracy to somebody. You have 100 children. You're saying, hey, we'll get ice cream. You know, and who wants vanilla? Who wants chocolate? Well, 43 want vanilla and 41 want chocolate, and then the rest want butter pecan. Well, guess what? Everybody gets vanilla. That's democracy that a 3-year-old can understand.
Yep.
You know, it's the same. You can break it down easily for them, and but you're a jerk for even coming up with an analogy like that. How dare you talk about poison M&Ms and Somalis in the same sentence?
These are human beings,
yes,
Johnny.
Exactly. Yeah. They're human beings. They're good people. You know, egalitarianism and altruism.
But those people that got beheaded and those people who were knifed and stabbed to death and those people that were blown up, we don't really care about them, right?
They must not have been tolerant enough.
Exactly. It is their fault on some level.
Those people in Brussels that got blown up in the airport, they must not have, you know, they must not have been wearing their refugees welcome T-shirts.
Well, they're probably children of evil Europeans who benefited from colonialism or something. Oh, so
must have been, and therefore it's nothing of value was lost. So you know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, it's just some more dead white people.
Yeah, exactly. It's just a statistic. Who cares, mm-hmm. right? Finally, it's the chicken is coming home to roost, right?
Right. Colonialism is coming back to kick Europe's ass. This isn't reverse colonialism. This is an invasion. It's a whole different thing.
Oh, yeah. Very much different. And it's, I mean, think about it. I mean, put that in perspective. I mean, what happened is, first of all, very few people were going into some of these areas. In some cases, they worked, of course, together with the local population. They utilized resources. They built up infrastructure. In this case, we just have a complete parasitical relationship where nothing is benefited on our end. You know?
Right. No, things are being destroyed, as a matter of fact.
Right,
like they're tearing down churches in France that are God knows how old, 1,000 years old or whatever, 800 years old. They're tearing them down to build a mosque. You know, you have like Paris. You have You have places where white people can't go in Paris. You have places where white people can't go in Sweden. You have places where cops can't go. You know.
And we are the problem for talking about this. You know, we are the problem. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Don't bring attention to it. It will just go away.
Right.
One day, and it's just going to go away.
Yeah. And the next thing you know, like London is 65% Muslim.
Well, actually, let's talk about that here before we take a break, Johnny.
Oh, sure.
The developments in London. I was listening to another show earlier today, a British guy talking about the English population in London, a minority in their own capital, and the mayor, Sadiq Khan, which is, by the way, I don't know if you saw some of the stories, I'm sure you have. Some of the first acts that he did was to go to the Holocaust Museum. He was thanking all his Jewish buddies who'd enabled him to get in. And then on top of it, of course, Breitbart started to claim that this guy is an anti-Semite. You know, it's just like...
Right,
really?
Right off the bat. Yeah. Well, he ran against a Jew. It was him and a Jew. Like a billionaire Jew and him.
Yeah, Goldsmith or something, right?
What? Goldsmith? They're not even like subtle about it anymore. You know, but diversity won out at the end of the day.
Yeah, you exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have this guy, and the other thing that he did, he was talking about how there's way too many white males on the London transport.
Right.
How is that possible when the population is 60 or 56 or 65%, I don't remember exactly what it is, but percent Muslim? How could there be too many white people at that point?
Yeah. Jeez, I mean, this is really...
London has fallen.
Yep, exactly.
London Bridge is falling down.
Yep. I wonder, I mean, take note, ladies and gentlemen. I wonder how things is going to be. Let's make some predictions, Johnny.
Sure.
How are things going to be in London in 15 years from now? What do you think we're looking at?
Oh, man, I think we're looking at a very small minority of whites... A lot more ghetto. I don't mean ghetto as in like American ghetto where it's like, you know, the hip hop and black culture or whatever, but like ghettos where it's just like poor sections of like the Middle East. You know, it's going to be more like the Middle East. I think every year it's going to get worse and worse. I think there's going to be more violence. There's going to be, you can see the videos now where they have these clashes with Muslims and whites, and it's just going to get worse and worse. You know, they're taking over. They're calling it their country.
And it's going to be white people's fault, right? All these problems.
Of course it's going to be white people's fault. And the thing about English people is English people have this natural, this like automatic instinct to apologize for everything. You know?
Yeah, and that is true. That is true.
And they've been doing it forever. And now they're because it's built in, you know, they don't want to cause a fuss. They don't want to cause a fuss or you know, they don't want to seem racist. They don't want to seem whatever. So they'll just let it happen and let it happen and let it happen until, like literally they're being set on fire personally. You know, and somehow they're going to say that it was their fault that they're set on fire.
They'll just bow and walk off the stage from their own capital, right?
Yep. Just give it up. I mean, like the financial capital of the world, London. You know, and they're just going to give it up to the Muslims.
Yeah,
I don't want to call them all Pakistani, but like a good percentage of them are Pakistani.
Yeah, a lot. I think I looked to what was it demographically? I looked at it was, I think it was about 100. Was it 100 million Pakistanis in the world?
Jesus Christ!
Let me just look at that again. Let me see.
100 million in the world?
Well, in Pakistan alone, right? The demographics. Okay, there is some, of course, maybe differences there, but within the country. Population. Oh, sorry. 2015, almost 200 million.
Mm. 200 million.
And think about this too, Johnny, though, that at the end of the day, I mean, England is a small island, the British Isles, it's a small set of islands. And at the end of the day, many of these people, they might destroy England, but they could always go back to Pakistan, and it will be all Pakistani there. It will be all their country, right?
Exactly. They always have somewhere they can go. If you're Eritrean, if you're Somalian, if you're Pakistani, if you're Afghani, if whatever, you can always go back. We don't have anywhere to go back to. This is where we came from. You know, the British don't have anywhere else to go. The Swedes don't have anywhere else to go. The Germans have nowhere else to go. And... yeah, they're getting pushed. It just pisses me off and triggers me. Sorry.
It's not only displacement. It is genocide. That's what it is. We're being pushed out of our own territory.
It really is. Yeah. It really is. When you have things like the anti-Trump movement tweeting things like, you know, no more white babies. You know.
Oh right. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Stuff like that. You know, like white people shouldn't have kids. Why do you think they promote the? Oh my God! We just had Mother's Day here. and the fur baby, you know, people are, I don't have kids. I have a cat and a dog. Well, those aren't kids.
Right.
You know, you're not, yeah. Just the don't have kids culture that we have going on over here. And it's not just that whole idiocracy thing where the dumb people are having kids and the smart people aren't. Because that's a meme too. Because it's white people aren't having kids. It's not just the dumb people just happen to not be white. They're having
kids. That's right.
And I don't mean it without facts, because I can back up all those facts with IQ statistics.
That is true. That is true. Exactly. Who cares about facts? No, but it's the truth. That's just it, though. I mean, I think as much as we can both make fun of these things and kind of toss them around in a much more easy way, I guess, than most people, at the end of the day, there's facts and truth and statistics and everything that is backing that up. I think we need that to stand on. But frankly, in certain aspects, too, I also think that it's, considering how dire the situation is, in many regards, it is more important for us simply just to take our own side and wanting to have that sense of feeling that we are righteous in who we are and the fact that we want to win, if you will, as opposed to just being kind of someone who's just after the objective truth, if you see what I'm saying. And like saying, well, that's not factually correct. Like, who gives a shit, right? When it's so bad,
right.
We need to just take our own side and make sure that we assert ourselves and can be in a position of you know, controlling our own countries and our own destiny here.
Mm-hmm. You're giving them facts. Well, your percentages were off by 2%, so I don't believe you. Ha, ha, ha. That's, well, whatever. It was still, you know, the numbers are still there. And they don't, yeah. It's just so bad to watch. It's hard to watch.
Extremely,
you know,
extremely
yeah.
hard.
And that's why I think, like, the comedy kind of helps. You know, if you can laugh about it, it makes it a little less, you know, wanting to just go out and scream in people's faces, how bad is it? You know, like, what is it going to take to wake these people up? I don't know what it's going to take, really.
I don't know either. That's actually something I'm going to talk about in the second hour. But one more thing I want to squeeze in here. I don't know if you saw, we actually posted this story today. There was, in Germany, it was state-subsidized, what they call flirt workshops set up, so that asylum seekers can learn how to flirt with German women, girls.
Oh, my God. I saw something similar earlier about how, like, they had, like, signs, like, you know, how what not to, don't touch here, don't touch there, kind of a thing.
Right.
I didn't know they were actually setting up flirt work. That's, oh, my God. It's so bad. It's funny. Like, you look at it, and I have to laugh. You know, I know you laugh when you see it, but you're laughing it's funny because it's true sort of thing. You know what I mean?
That's insanity. Like, I'm reaching the point of insanity laughter, you know?
Mm-hmm, yeah. That's, I did not read that, but I'm going to look for it now afterwards.
Recently, workshops offer asylum seekers courses on how to flirt with German women. The courses are financed by the German government with, of course, taxpayers' money. The Bayerische Rundfunk, or the Bavarian Broadcasting Company, I guess, is the ones who actually are documenting
on this. It's the media.
Right, right.
Interesting. Interesting how it's the media, and who controls the media, boy? It's like, it's one of those things, it's like, I don't know if you remember that whole, like, the 6 degrees of separation game where you can separate somebody from six. Well, I do it, it's like 6 degrees of can't eat bacon. I can tie it back to the Jews and 6 steps less. Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, it's amazing. We had actually something similar in Sweden, I think it was over a year ago now, too, but the government in Sweden were setting up these, like, play dates and meetings between young white Swedish women and asylum-seeking boys.
Oh,
and it's almost like that they're, you know, it's like one of those lab experiments where you, like, you put, you know, kind of a I don't know, a hyena and a beaver in a, you know, playpen or something, and, like,
right, what happens.
Breed, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, talk about, like, wanting to create some kind of, you know, genetic experiment or something. This is the new level to it, you know?
Yeah. I saw something the other day. It was a gorgeous blonde-haired, blue-eyed Aryan girl with a dark skin African of some sort, and they're in an embrace, you know, staring at the camera, smiling, and it's all in German, and I don't read German, but it was all about interracial dating. and how cool it is to do now. You know, and that's, they're just pushing that, the race mixing, you know, and well, you know, cause they have all this new flood of dark skinned people into this very white country, you know, and I'm pretty sure that most of the white girls aren't really going to be going after them without some sort of prodding and pushing. You know what I mean?
No, of course not. Yeah. But, yeah, I wonder how impressionable some of these young women are, you know, young girls. Is it enough? In some cases, it feels like it is. Just show it on the media, push it enough, and it will be the cool thing to do, and they will follow suit.
Right. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they see, like, you know, the American basketball players and rappers with all their money and stuff, and maybe they figure that that's what's coming over. I don't know.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Well, Johnny, tell us a bit about the podcast, the show where people can hear that. And, yes. if there's any details you want to share here before we take a break and then pick up in a second, but give us some of the details.
Yes, my show is called The Current Year Tonight. It is on therightstuffradio.biz, and you can get there from therightstuff.biz. We have a lot of podcasts on there. And like I said, we took a little bit of a hiatus, but we're coming back soon, and hopefully funnier than it was before. we'll try to make it as funny as possible. I'm on Facebook and Twitter. So it's Johnny Monoxide on Twitter.
Very good. Yeah, we'll definitely make sure to have those linked up, Johnny. But yeah, it can be. It's difficult to write that kind of material and do it on a regular basis.
It really is. It really is. It's like, it's hard because, like, you know, I do have a job on top of it, and there's some days I come home and I don't feel like being funny, but I have to record something, you know, and I have to make it, you know, I don't have the luxury of being Jon Stewart and having a crew of Jewish writers write my stuff for me, you know,
right,
and sit down and just read it, and that's what I do, and, like, you know, and I do that for, like, an hour, and then I go run off and date black chicks like Jon Stewart, you know, but, but it's just like, yeah, so... It's not super difficult, but it's also not easy at the same time, you know, to be, and a lot of times, like, the news isn't really funny in a way that, like, you know, I mean, I could make it funny the way they make it funny. Like, if I wanted to make fun of, you know, like, whatever low hanging fruit there is, Ted Cruz, Kasich, whatever, I could do that. But, like, that's too easy. You know, we want to do the current year stuff, transgenderism, and I don't want to, just the most paused stories and try and make them as funny as possible.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of material out there, but it's definitely an art to transform that into the right thing that you can use, you know?
Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah.
You know, and it takes a while, you know, and it's literally me. So.
Right. So are you opening the door to invite some people who can submit
always,
data?
I do get a lot of song lyrics. Mm-hmm. Stuff, you know, you guys should do this song, you guys should do that song. It'd be, you know, that's great. I'll be glad to, you know, to do a cover of somebody's song. But what's even better is if you guys have already done it and send it to me already done.
Oh, yeah.
Even better. Because,
yep,
I know some of you guys are musicians. And I know there's a lot of people out there that have, you know, production skills and whatever. And, you know, if you find a funny story on the internet that you think that we might want to use, you know, write up a little funny synopsis of it and send it to me. I'll use it. Why not? You know, there's a story that I missed at your college that's just like some insane amount of leftist something, you know, send it to me. I'll be glad. I'm not above taking help.
Very good. Well, you know, we need people eventually doing this kind of stuff full time, you know, and really just mm-hmm. getting it all out there, just chipping away and hammering. I mean, at the end of the day, to borrow some of the rules from the radicals, you know, there's nothing that's so efficient as just making fun of it, you know, making fun of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Making fun of it, like I said, it's so easy now. They do it themselves.
Yeah, we got to jump on that before they take that.
before they take that away.
Yeah, exactly. Right, yeah. Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, Johnny, we'll take a short break here, and then we'll continue in the second hour. But definitely check out the websites. Check out the show, The Current Year Tonight. We'll have links up to that. and to Johnny's Facebook and Twitter as well, so you can connect there if you want to. All right, we'll be right back. Stay with us. We'll see you after the break.
On the calling gray Chicago morning, a poor little baby child is born in the ghetto, and his mommy cries. Cause if there's one thing that she don't need, it's another hungry man for the feet in the ghetto. People don't you understand, the child need a helping hand, who help you to be an angry young man someday. Take a look at you and me, are we too blind to see, or do we simply turn our head and look another way when the world turns? And a hungry little boy with a run of place in his street that's cold by his lonely ghetto, and his hungry bird. Start to roam in the street, and at night he learns how to fight in the ghetto. And one night in desperation, a young man breaks away. He buys a gun, steals a car, tries to run, but he don't get far, and his mommy cries. As Troy's run, an angry man plays down in the street with a gun in his hand. In the ghetto, there's a young man dying. On a calling gray Chicago morning, another little baby child is born in the ghetto, and his mommy cries.
We will continue with Johnny Monoxide in the second hour at redicemembers.com, our members' website, obviously. When you want to catch the second hour of this show or any of our previous ones going back to 2006, do sign up for a membership, and then you can stream or download any of our previous shows. Subscribe to our RSS feeds for members. We have them broken up by year, so it's super easy to download everything on there if you so please. iTunes, feed readers, podcast apps, or what they call podcatchers. We are, by the way, going to update our members' website next, so we are starting on that now. So thank you for your patience on that. Before we proceed with the second hour, let me tell you what other guests we have lined up next. Jeff Wilkerson from Anti-Freemason, who wrote the book Sion's Army. We have Billy Wilson on the art scene, Nathan Demigo from Identity Europa, and also Vox Day, together with Cynic, about the SJW list. And then later we have Dr. Andrew Joyce from the Occidental Observer. So stay tuned, the second hour is coming up. RedIceMembers.com is the website. Go there, and we'll talk to you after the break. Thank you so much.